This is
Barely Legal.
Hey there, welcome back to Barely Legal. My name is Eva Eben.
And I'm Bri Sedona.
And on today's episode, we're going to be talking about corruption within the Supreme Court on either side of the aisle, though technically we're not supposed to have the aisle, but there's an aisle. There's corruption on either side of it, I'd say.
Definitely. And I think, you know, there's been a lot of media coverage, I think in particular, about the stuff regarding Justice Clarence Thomas, which we kind of talked about two episodes ago, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. But, you know, new stuff has come out. I think the stuff about Justice Clarence Thomas kind of sparked a discussion about, you know, the justices as a whole, which we'll kind of talk about towards mm-hmm. the end. About what is, you know, their duty to be nonpartisan and to abide by certain rules to ensure that they are nonpartisan and unbiased in making these decisions that impact everyone in our country.
Yeah, and for being the nine, like, arguably most powerful, like, public officials mm-hmm. with the ability to write laws in, laws out, judicial review, like,
yeah.
these kinds of things set precedent that will echo throughout this country for hundreds of years to mm-hmm. come. For being people with that kind of power, I think these are people who aren't constrained by very much. The Absolutely. U.S., I think there's a code of conduct that federal judges, U.S. judges are beholden to, but Supreme Court justices are not beholden to those, the ethics conduct there, and the rules that Congress has to follow when it comes to receiving gifts and that mm-hmm. kind of thing. Again, justices aren't, like, don't have to follow those things, as I think proven by the whole Harlan Crow scenario situation.
Yeah. So, no. And I think this is something that, you know, Congress has been aware of. The Senate Judiciary Committee held a hearing on ethics reform on May 2nd, which was a Tuesday. Yes, which was a Tuesday a couple weeks ago. And, you know, they invited Chief Justice mm-hmm. Roberts to come and, you know, talk about what's going on, to which Chief Justice basically said,
no, thanks.
No, thank you. Not my problem. And lawmakers introduced a bipartisan bill that would require the Supreme Court to create a code of conduct for justices.
Yeah.
So this wouldn't be something that lawmakers are creating themselves. It would be something that's up to the Supreme Court to make. Mm-hmm. However, this is a bill that's being introduced. And I think, you know, right now the Supreme Court is probably one of the least favored branches.
Yeah.
However, amidst, like, other stuff, it's kind of hard to be the least favorite branch.
But they managed.
But yeah. Yeah, they did it. Good for them, I suppose.
Yeah. I feel like there's been all these events that have led up to this moment.
Yeah. Like, and I would mm-hmm. say, like, the first, you know, few is with, so Justice Clarence Thomas, as we've mentioned before, has had luxury trips paid for by Republican super donor Harlan Crow, mm-hmm. which kind of gave people, this was sort of the first opening to this ethics investigation, if you will, mm-hmm. by the people, by the public, by, you know, news sources into mm-hmm. the Supreme Court and who they're getting, for lack of a better word, gifts from. Mm-hmm. You know, I think a trip is a gift.
For sure.
And, you know, Justice Thomas's response to this was that early in his tenure, he was told it was not reportable if there was no business before the court from, you know, the people that are giving you the gifts, except we know that Harlan Crow has had business before the court.
I think in 2005, if yes. I'm not mistaken. There was some matter up there, and he was a partial owner in the company that was that was involved in the case.
Yeah, and wanted to appeal. And I think, you know, not only that, but along with that, we talked about this as well. Three properties were bought by Crow from Justice Thomas for over $100,000.
Yep.
One of them being Justice Thomas's home in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And we also know Jenny Thomas, of course, Justice Clarence Thomas's wife, has been in quite a bit of a scandal herself after the 2020 election and the 2021 insurrection.
When they released
on the Capitol.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they released her text with White House Chief of Staff at the time, Mark Meadows, saying mm-hmm. that, you know, we can't allow this election to go through, that kind of thing. And she was also involved in, like, Bush v. Gore and, like, you know, like, that kind of thing. And
yeah.
There have been ties there.
Yeah, and which is something we talked about, like, a couple weeks ago when we made the first episode, But I think that's really interesting, again, to say that your spouse is separated from you when you eat dinner at the same table, sleep in the same bed, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It's hard to kind of keep those opinions separate.
Yeah, I do think when you're married, in the eyes of the law, you are one person. That's why we don't have spouses testify against each other, except for, you know, domestic abuse and that kind of thing. Because when you are testifying against your spouse, you're incriminating yourself. It's a Fifth Amendment. So I think expecting them to keep this separation from their careers.
It's
interesting. It's interesting. Well, that's not the only scandal. And that's not the only scandals we've seen. So with Clarence Thomas, again, he raised his grandnephew, Mark Martin, as his quote-unquote son. He said so himself. He had legal custody of him from when Mark Martin was 6 years old. And he sent Martin to a private boarding school in Georgia. It was called Hidden Lake Academy, if I'm not mistaken. Tuition was, you know, more than $6,000 a month, but Thomas was not the one covering tuition. Bank statements from July of 2009 show that Harlan Crowe's company was the one that paid the tuition that month. And the tuition paid by Crowe extends to more than just July of 2009. He paid the entire time that Martin was at Hidden Lake Academy. And even after he left Hidden Lake Academy, he attended Randolph Mason Academy in Virginia for time before and after Hidden Lake. And that was also paid for by Crowe. The total, like this price tag, it's not clear. It's ambiguous so far. But ProPublica is estimating that it could have exceeded $150,000. So that's crazy.
That's a lot of money to pour into someone else's kid. You were telling me about what Harlan Crowe responded to this, right?
So I think ProPublica reached out to Crowe, and the statement they released was very, I felt like they were skirting the statement. They were talking about Harlan Crowe believes in education and wants to reach out to the community and be a benefactor to low-income, at-risk students to help them access quality education. And they were talking about tuitions and funding and scholarships and this kind of thing. But the, you know, proxy son of a Supreme Court justice is not a low-income, at-risk youth, you know, at risk of not receiving quality education. Like, I think, so they were completely skirting the question at hand, I think. So that does not look good. I mean, I think the other stuff with Crowe and Thomas, except the properties, like the luxury trips, for example, we could say, you know, when you have a friendship and one person is far more wealthy than the other, you have this like power imbalance. They're going to take the check.
Yeah.
That's fine. That could have been completely, you know, not malicious. But when we look at these things, the properties and the tuition and these things that don't just extend to friendship and I'll pick up the check, but
Like I think that's past the normal boundaries of a friendship, you know, even in those super elite circles.
Like, part if I became a billionaire and you were a Supreme Court justice, I would pick up our check when we went to Indonesia, like island hopping, but I don't think I'd pay for your kids' tuition.
I don't think you know, I would return the favor either. $150,000 is crazy.
I mean, it's nothing to him, to be fair.
But that's also, you know, that's
a huge conflict of interest.
Yeah, definitely. And that's not, you know, Justice Clarence Thomas is not the only justice, as we mentioned, who has had these scandals.
And this is true. So Neil Gorsuch, he, along with I think two others, owned this tract of land that was on the market for a few years, but they were never really able to find a buyer. But he did find a buyer about 9 days after he was confirmed to the Supreme Court. The buyer was a chief executive of Greenberg Traurig, which, sorry, I don't know how to pronounce that, but they are a massive law firm. They've frequently been in front of the Supreme Court before and after Gorsuch's confirmation. I think that's odd. 9 days after you're confirmed, you find a buyer for this property.
That's a chief executive of a huge law firm. Like, and again, you know, of course it's, you know, maybe he doesn't know.
Maybe it's coincidence.
Justice Gorsuch disclosed the property sale, but didn't disclose who it was sold to, you know. And I think that in it of itself, if you're keeping someone's name hidden, something hidden, then you feel like you have something to hide, potentially, you know? And it,
yeah,
it's just,
I feel like my initial thought was there could be so many reasons why a buyer would remain anonymous. But when you look at this and you look at the fact that days after you're confirmed to the Supreme Court, there's financial, like you gain financially from somebody who will be appear, not him, maybe not the executive himself, but like who has ties to people who will appear in front of you over and over again and who will have a financial tie in which way you decide a case and that kind of thing. So, okay, so that was scandal number five.
Yeah. Number six is about Chief Justice Roberts and his wife, Jane Roberts, who is a legal recruiter. And she's paid millions of dollars for placing lawyers at firms. Again, these firms are ones that had business before the court. And again, this is a huge conflict of interest. And this is something that we're seeing time and time again. And it makes you question, was there any, even if there's no, you know, bias in making the decision to take up a case, there still could be inherent bias, you know, towards one side if you have an economic stake in that side, right?
And I know, like, a lot of people, like, I've talked about these things with, like, a bunch of people, and they've all been saying, like, what do you expect these people to do? They're just human beings. Do you expect them to not talk to their spouses? Do you expect them to recuse themselves all the time? Like, and my response is always, they don't get to be regular people. Like, you are of a handful of the most powerful people in the country, on the planet.
Yep.
You don't get to be a human being. Like, you don't get, you know?
Yeah, like, I think you're serving a duty to America and to American citizens. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that duty means potentially losing out on some of the freedoms that you are even protecting yourself. For example, freedom of speech. You know, I think a lot of people are like, well, of course, we know that money is speech because the Supreme Court has said so, and with campaign finance, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And
Citizens
corporates. United. Yeah, Citizens United. Exactly. Like, you are making a statement by where your money is going. And if your money is going into the hands of the Supreme Court justice, that is absolutely a statement.
Absolutely. And if you are a Supreme Court justice accepting money from somebody who, you know, a billionaire super donor for a certain party, it's just an issue. It's weird. It could be so benign, but again, I mean, we say the same thing with presidents and we say the same thing with politicians. Like, you get a privilege when you say, I'm going to sign up for this job that so many people would kill and die for.
Mm-hmm.
And that means maybe I don't get to enjoy these freedoms and privileges, as you said.
Yeah.
Again, this is not something that exists just on, you know, the right side of the aisle. It's not just more conservative justices who are seemingly a little bit more biased these days. We had an issue with, I think, Sonia Sotomayor.
Yes.
Yeah. So basically, Justice Sonia Sotomayor released a book, and the publishing house was Penguin Random House, and she has refused to recuse herself from cases involving Penguin Random House. So, like, again, Neil Gorsuch also, I think his autobiography was through Penguin as well. He also declined to recuse himself. But Breyer, who is no longer part of the court but was replaced by Ketanji Brown Jackson, he recused himself because he had stocks with Penguin. So, like, I don't know. I think it varies. I think this is not just Republicans are corrupt kind of thing. I think it's on either side. It's a systemic institutional issue.
Yeah, definitely. And I think when you have that much power, you need to do more than what Chief Justice Roberts did in his response. And, you know, the whole court backed him and signed on to the response, which was basically just, I'm not getting involved in this hearing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need to stay out of the issues of Congress because we're separate branches, like this whole thing of, I'll kind of handle my people if you handle your people. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, he was like very much, we have an ethics code in place, and the justices will continue to abide by it, but we don't need to get involved in this, you know, and we should keep a separation and independence of the branches was kind of his whole spiel, which I think it's interesting that he didn't show up. Again, I'm not surprised that the Chief Justice didn't show up to a hearing about the corruption of the court.
Yeah.
However, I do think, you know, this potentially having this bipartisan bill could do something about Supreme Court ethics. But I think the biggest thing that we can do as people is public opinion. Even though the Supreme Court is quote unquote protected from the passions of the people, again, time and time again, even I've stressed that we elect our senators who approve and confirm Supreme Court justices, judges on lower courts. We are the people who, you know, vote in those members who are approving whether or not these people can do their job.
Yeah.
So we have a say in whether or not someone becomes the next, you know, Supreme Court justice. And I think it's important that we continue to hold Supreme Court justices accountable for their lack of ethics.
And there is a limited amount of accountability for them at this point, just because lifetime, it's a lifetime appointment, that kind of thing. But, you know, there is pressure from this, from being placed on the Supreme Court from the other branches, for sure. There are things that can be done. Like, it's absolutely, it's not just a matter of they get to, once they're confirmed, they can do whatever they want.
For sure.
And I think there are a lot of questions that need to be asked about how stringent should these, how should this code of conduct be? Do we completely rob them of the ability to talk to their spouses or accept gifts from friends? Or
Like,
these are good questions.
I think it's also really difficult, all in all, to get an unbiased judge in the first place. And I think that's obviously hard to do, and I don't think anyone's asking that of them, but I think we are asking for transparency.
At least.
You know, at the very least, transparency, honesty, at the very least, some sort of accountability.
Tell me who the buyer is.
Exactly. You know, and if you can't tell me, then there's a problem, don't you think? Right. So this is just something that we wanted to talk about a little bit, because we want to talk about, I mean, obviously our podcast is about Supreme Court decisions and the power that they have, but it's interesting, I think, to consider how that power is impacted by, you know, other external factors and how those decisions are impacted.
Well, thank you for listening. We will see you in 2 weeks. I hope that, you know, this made some impact on you, taught you something you didn't know.